multidimensional fractal of consciousness currently expressing itself as a human being in the most authentic way that we can imagine. Always remember, take only what resonates and leave the rest. Welcome to Mental Magic. More real than anything else to me is the enlivening force within us that is indestructible, infinitely curious, and at home even in apparent chaos. This alive immensity erupts as a train wreck as much as an alpine meadow of wildflowers. These are the opening lines of Lisa Carrillo's book, An Unprincipled Life, Living from the Unknown. In this episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Lisa about some of the ideas in her book, which were birthed from her experiences after awakening to her conscious self in 2009. We briefly speak about the idea of living life as a game and strategies for playing that game to its fullest, as well as learning how to have compassion for your fears to the point of being able to tap into the past life memories that they may be connected to help us allow ourselves to resolve unprocessed emotions and stuck energies in our body. We also talked about releasing attachment to the stories that we spin about the nature of our experiences and what it's like to live life from a place of knowing that we are basically okay. This conversation was mind-expanding while also being so gracious and present to the unfolding of every moment to come next. So without further ado, please enjoy Lisa Carrillo. Hi, everyone. My guest today is the author of An Unprincipled Life, Living from the Unknown. And before we dive into this conversation, Lisa, if you can go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sure. From a little girl, I had a sense that I wasn't just this body, that I was going to live way beyond this body, and that I had lived before this body. But, you know, there's a lot of influences that came into my life, and I did very well in school, entered the corporate world as an engineer, and had an MBA. And then something inside me just wanted to know what I am. I heard about enlightenment, and that really sparked my interest. I didn't know what in the world that could be, but I sensed that it was an intimate, ongoing experience with the infinite. And that just changed my life. Once I had the experience of recognizing all the thoughts I have that I thought were me are not me, it totally changed how I live. And so now I've written these couple of books and do some meditation leading and spiritual coaching.
Amazing. And I am so excited to dig into this conversation. But the question I ask all of my guests at the beginning is, what does it feel like to be you?
So I would say it's really the same thing that's at the core of everybody. You know, it's that question in one way, you know, I don't know anything really. It's very open. And, yet there's this certainty that what I am is this source of life, this source of love. And yeah, I have human thoughts and experiences, but none of them seem as real as this source, infinite being.
Yes, I can definitely relate to that. And you had mentioned in your intro that, you know, it sounded like you had a pretty structured upbringing. When you were going through that transition of becoming aware of the fact that infinite being exists and you are a part of that infinite being, how did that unfold for you? Like, what was your, I guess, awakening story?
Sure. Well, I definitely felt at various moments this expansiveness. And I knew that there was something really true about that. For example, one time I heard somebody say, in the end, there's no need for forgiveness. And what they meant by that is that we start to see that everything has been right. We don't have anything to forgive. And I thought that is the most outrageous statement. Clearly, that's divine. No human would have that thought. Right. But the biggest turning point was in 2009 in a spiritual retreat. I was hoping to be spiritually enlightened. And I noticed halfway through the retreat that I was so busy hoping for something that I wasn't fully there. And I thought, I'm going to waste this retreat. So I let go of all expectations and just decided to just be there. And the next morning I woke up, and the thoughts that used to create a sense of an individual Lisa had stopped. All I could feel was just this one dance, all of us being choreographically moved together towards and away from each other. And then we made up stories about why we were going towards and away from each other. And I saw how my thoughts had always tried to predict all the options so that whichever option came through, I could latch onto those set of thoughts and feel like I had made something happen.
That is so real to just the human condition. It's like we're constantly making up these stories about what's going on around us and trying to make meaning of life. And after reading your book, it seems like you've tapped into this knowing that everything we think we are is purely mental space jargon that we're coming up with. And so what do you believe at your core about what the point of being a human being is?
So I can't say anything from belief. It's more from how it feels, but how it feels is that this infinite vastness that we are is perfect, whole, complete, unharmable. It really doesn't need to have any experiences. And the only reason it could decide to have experiences is for the joy of it, for the interest of it. You know, there's nothing to achieve. So each experience is interesting to this infinite being. I one time had this vision of, and this is, you know, just a symbolic kind of thing, not how I think it actually happens, but infinite being kind of taking a recipe, like, you know, 49 qualities of this type or 38 qualities of these types, and then throwing them out and saying, I wonder what those ones will do, you know, just out of pure curiosity. So we can't fail. We all will do is show what that recipe does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In our head, we can come up with an idea that we're growing and we're getting somewhere. And that's great. You know, that's part of the experience of being our limited selves. But fundamentally, there's nowhere to grow to.
That's the one part in your book that I really liked is that you said there's no storyline. There, like the storyline that we're making up is not true. It's not false. It just is whatever we're making up. And another part that you had mentioned is that you would surrender to this idea of failure. And when you surrender to the idea of failure, it expanded your heart to realize that everything is just love. And I have believed this in my core, but at the same time, attempting to live into that has been a struggle for me because, you know, you have, there's, everyone has their own story that they're coming up with and trying to pull you back into their worlds. How do you stay grounded in what you know and what you've discovered to be the truth for you?
I really, really like feeling that open, expansive feeling. So when I find myself attaching to beliefs again, I just notice the constriction and I can't hold on to it because it's too painful. And so I've just become more and more sensitive to that. One day I was just walking down the street thinking we had just bought our house and I was hoping we'd stay in this house for my whole life because I really like it. Its location is great and everything. And I could feel, oh, wow, hoping to stay in my house for my whole life is constricting me. And I had to let go of even that kind of a hope because, you know, what we are is so much bigger and the unknown is so much more open that any kind of narrowing just starts to feel too heavy.
And so with this perspective and living this openness, how does it help you in your relationships with other people? Like, how are you when you're engaging with other people who don't have this awareness and who are operating as though, you know, their problems are, you know, the absolute truth and need to be addressed in the moment? What is that like for you?
Yeah, some people, boy, their lives can be so heavy. They just are filled with so much disappointment. And I feel a lot of compassion, first of all. You know, that is such a heavy way to live. And at the moment, I know that's that's the best they can do. That's the best they know. So I hold compassion for them. And I recognize, you know, it used to be that it felt heavy. You know, I'd want to get away. And more and more, I don't feel that so much because I know that their journey is perfect for them. And I have this confidence that they are being carried. So I may offer some options now and then, you know, of other perspectives, but, you know, if that's just not resonating for them, it's okay. You know, there's no path that is not right. So, but what would make it heavy is if I felt like they were suffering unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. And they're not, it's not unnecessary. It is part of their path. And if I felt like I had to fix them or get them somewhere, but I don't. So I don't feel anything wrong about their situation. And that has made it not so heavy at all.
That is very interesting to me because for me, I feel I identify as being an empath. And so I feel people's feelings. And then I'm always like, well, I need to fix it. And like with this idea that there's nothing to fix, that they're on the exact path that they're intended to be on, I can even feel in my own system how much freedom that brings to me as well as it would for them.
Right. It is so much lighter. And yeah, you know, you can feel their heaviness, but it's a body sensation, right? It's constriction around the heart or the gut or the throat. And, you know, sensations are okay. We can be with those for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of brings to mind to me the idea of people who have found just this openness of connection with infinite being, source, God, whatever label we want to put on it. And we start to understand that life is always perfect. Life is always as it is. There's nothing that needs to be changed or fixed. There becomes this way, and you had said at one point, this book is my report from the field. And it struck in me, I have this concept sometimes when I can drop into this space where I feel like I'm a visitor on Earth taking field notes of what it's like to be a human. And I kind of got that sense from you as well in your book. Could you elaborate a little bit on what you meant by that?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, what it feels like life mastery is at this point is this is a game. And mm-hmm. I get to see how good am I at enjoying all parts of the game. And when I can find that I'm big enough to not be afraid of anything, you know, I'm grounded in love enough to not have any hurt that seems too overwhelming, then I'm in that place of life is pure fun.
Yes, yes, 1,000%. I definitely resonate with the idea of this being, like I think you said, a party. Like, and you show up to a party in the moment, you have the experience you have, and then you don't have all of these attachments to it because nothing is permanent here. Everything's always changing. And with the idea of life being a game, how do you play that game? Like, what is your strategy for playing it?
Yeah. So I think if you play a game half-heartedly or from the sidelines, it's not as fun. Personally, anyways, not as fun. So I really find myself invested and engaged in life. And for me, doing the things that make me feel that wonder, whether it's recognizing at the moment that there's nothing I need to do, and just sitting in an open experience. Or it could be, there's a lot to do and I'm going very quickly, going through this to-do list, you know, running through these things. Yeah, that's playing all out too. Or, you know, I'm feeling these feelings with people and in the moment I can even be reactive. Yes, that's part of the game too. You know, all of it is part of the game. So I'm not afraid of engaging. And if I end up feeling some ways that I engaged felt painful, you know, I'll step back later and reflect and see what was inside me that was driving that. only because I think it's more fun to stay in the more open place, not because it's required of me.
I can see that. And in those moments where you do have something that you're reacting to or responding to, and you feel as though you do need to reflect, because I believe that the external world is essentially mirroring our internal experiences. And so what we see outside of us is something that's reflecting inside of us. So when you're doing that introspective work, what does that look like for you?
Okay, so let's, oh, here, well, here was an example just yesterday. So we're starting a business, we put an offer on a building, and then we found out that the building won't work. It doesn't have the right specifications for the equipment that we're going to be installing. So I had to make the phone call to say, we're withdrawing the offer. And I could feel, you know, the ideas of Lisa are that I would have known that beforehand. I wouldn't be withdrawing an offer.
Right.
The inspection person was supposed to arrive in 1 hour. And the realtor has done so much good work. So, you know, I had all these thoughts about how to make it up to all these people who have invested thus far. And I thought, you know, just one step at a time. So I called the realtor and, you know, gave her the explanation, and you know, I felt her get a little anxious. She needed to make all these phone calls and see if she could cancel the appointment and that kind of thing. And all of that, I could have seen myself as the bad person. And then I realized, you know, that's what I knew to do in the moment. And same thing, say it, I had been in a situation where I snapped at my husband, which definitely happens. I trust that the other person is going to have all the inner resources to handle the hump I just gave them, the mountain I just gave them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can come back and say, I'm sorry, how can I make it up to you? But I trust, even when my role is to be the troublemaker, apparently, that's a valuable role too. I appreciate the troublemakers in my life. They have woken me up so much. And sometimes I'm the troublemaker in other people's lives, and that's okay.
Yeah, what it sounds like to me is there's just this radical acceptance at however the play is going to play out for you. So whatever role you need to step into, that's the role you play, whether it's a conscious thing or not. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes, you know, I'm in this rush and it isn't conscious. And yes, that's part of it too. There isn't one moment that isn't part of it. And it's such relief to know that it's kind of like the puzzle pieces. You know, I always want to be the good one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have all the puzzle pieces have the, you know, the arms sticking out. Some have to have the holes going in.
Exactly.
Sometimes I receive people's grace back to me and people's kindness back to me for things I've done that seemed like they were faults.
Yes, it's like, this is, it's so refreshing to talk to you, because it's just like, even having a conversation with someone who doesn't seem to have all of this baggage created around stories that we're holding on to because, you know, we're so identified with them. It's different and it's new for me. I haven't met a lot of people like you before. And so I'm very interested in like how, for me, it's a frequency, an open, light, open-hearted frequency that you're able to just hold for other people to react to or respond to. Like, are you constantly in this space of just open awareness, or like, does it fluctuate? Like, how does it operate for you?
Well, there were definitely periods where there were gaps when I wasn't very aware, you know, it was, but, you know, the awakening I described happened in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been the most important thing in my life. I see every life experience as an opportunity to deepen in this. So because that matters so much to me, I keep using every negative experience is an opportunity to look and see, oh, what was I attached to that made me think that was negative? And, those attachments, I can't just choose to let them go. But if I feel enough the pain of them and then find the turnaround, find why they are good. And that means I keep looking and keep looking and keep looking until I come back out to that expansive feeling again. So by doing that so many times, I've really lost attachment. So when I lose it, it will be within 5 minutes. I'm like, oh, this doesn't feel good. Okay, back to where I belong.
Got it. Got it. Yeah. So when you're doing that process of looking for, the reason why this is happening or how a way out of your attachment, is the looking process, is it like asking yourself questions? Like, what does that look like when you're digging around for the reasons?
Yeah, that's really good because it comes in all kinds of forms. I actually have another book called Living Awake, 20 Techniques to End. I Got It, I Lost It. And that one is all about all the different ways to look. But the main two are what is the good thing coming out here? And that has changed my values. I've discovered that the universe is much more interested in me interweaving my life with lots of other people. So lots of times the good thing is, my car breaks down, I get to meet the mechanics. Or my house has a problem, I get to meet the plumber or the electrician. These things, it turns out the universe seems very interested in. So being able to do that. And the other thing is really falling in love with letting go of the idea of Lisa. So sometimes the good thing is simply noticing, wow, I had an identity that I was going to be the smart one. And now I wasn't the smart one. What does it feel like to not be the smart one? And it's like this totally out of control, open, I have no grounding feeling. And that is actually an easier place to sense the infinite from than being in my comfort zone. So I welcome those things that push me out of my comfort zone and back into this curiosity.
Yes, I can feel that. I can definitely feel how releasing, and even if it's just for a moment, for people who are listening who haven't had this part of the experience yet, where you can detach from your identity that you've been, the name you were given at birth, where you were born, all of the different identity markers that, the world tells us is, who we are. I feel, and I believe that I'm in the beginning part of my journey of being able to just momentarily detach from who I identify as and then allowing myself to just see what happens next. And there is just so much more in me than I could even imagine while I was so attached to that one idea of who Chris is or who Christina is. So it's it makes me wonder, is this something that you have hopes of teaching other people about? I know you've written your books, but have you offered like classes? I know you said you do meditation retreats.
Right. So I have a YouTube channel. I don't want to, I have given some talks and I am expanding that. And I do have a course on my website, experiencingthetrueself.com. But I feel like I wanted to know that I know that I
Yeah.
know. I understand this process. I've applied it in my life. And at this point, I've applied it enough in my life that it feels like, okay, I see enough people who really they judge themselves for not being peaceful, or they judge themselves for whatever reasons. And, you know, you have an awakening of some sort, and then you find yourself acting how you used to, and you're disappointed. And all of that is so part of it that I want to just help people see they're already what they're seeking. And so anyways, this feels like it's coming into greater fruition right now. So yes, I am doing coaching and doing some talks different places, and it feels like it's growing into more.
Excellent. I'm so glad that you're existing in the world as you are and have been doing this work for so long, because I think you're right in that when we find whatever allows us to awaken ourselves, expand our own consciousness, however we want to say it, spending time with that space in ourselves, letting it grow and understanding how it works for us, I find it makes it more authentic when we are going out to offer it to other people. And so when I was reading your book, it felt as though you had spent so much time in this just awareness of who you are, from a place of not knowing who you are to from a place of knowing who you are. It's just like this infinite like circle, if you will.
Yes, it's great. I've had so many great experiences to apply that. So like, I felt guided to go back to school and become an ultrasound tech. And that was such an interesting experience. You know, I'm with people 20 years younger than me, and being a student with teachers who know ultrasound, but, you know, for example, I'm an engineer, so I know physics, I know other sciences. And so I could see I was being a student from people who knew what I need to learn, but didn't know some of the things that I know. And it was so great to get to practice having the beginner's mind in this place. And I also was attached, like, okay, I'm doing this investment, I'm going to graduate. But even that was this weight. So I had to say, okay, I let go. I think I'm going to graduate, but it's up to the universe if the universe is going to carry me through this. So it was really just a moment by moment going through school again.
What a radical trust. Just the amount of trust that it takes to recognize in each moment when you're having an attachment, when you feel that weight in your system, and then deciding to let it go. Was that something that you learned from the meditation retreat that you had that opened up this experience, or how did you learn that strategy?
So the letting go, I feel like one of the big things that helps that happen is what I call cultivating the basic okayness. And that's the sense that, okay, if I totally let go of control, somehow it's going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And I started with baby steps.
Okay.
Definitely baby steps. But, you know, I just kept taking bigger steps and seeing what happened and letting that just really register that, wow, I took that risk and it worked. Like when I left the corporate world, took that risk and it worked. And, you know, each new thing that I did, just trusting.
Was there any... I know one thing for me is that I would say I was programmed with a lot of fear in my system, and it's one thing that holds me back a lot of the times to step out, to take those risks and trust that everything will be okay. Did you also have fear to deal with, or how did you get to a place of being able to trust?
Yes. So I've had various fears I've dealt with, that's for sure. The money, for example, has been a fear at various times throughout my life. And when I left the corporate world, I had a nice savings. So that really helped.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw that I was spending my life on earning money that I wasn't even using. And I mm-hmm. thought, wow, really? Is that what I'm going to do? So it was a choice between being safe or being in love with testing possibilities, you know, testing mm-hmm. the unknown. And that inner fear really, I can't run over it. I have to have compassion for it. So at another time, I just sat there going through the thoughts about, okay, what if I became homeless on the street? How would that be? And I thought, okay, I'd probably be very hungry. And I've actually had this thing happen to me where I couldn't eat for 3 weeks and I lost more than 25% of my body weight. So, I was hungry. But actually, it was fine. It wasn't agonizing, surprisingly. So I thought, okay, well, I guess I can survive hunger. And I've been very, very cold at times. And I seem to get through that. And I was like, yeah, I would just survive moment by moment. It's all these ideas we have that are scary, but the moment by moment is really not scary as I, confronted what each thing would look like. So I was like, okay, I'm not afraid of being homeless. Not that I ever was close to it, but the fear was there. So at other times I've just felt into the fear. I had this fear that I was going to do something so bad it was going to cause somebody else to die. And I really sat with that fear, wondering, okay, where's this fear coming from? And as I sank in and just listened to the fear, felt the fear, I actually remembered a past life when I lived in tenement buildings. I was a guy, had four kids, and they all died because I couldn't come up with better living conditions for them. And, from malnourishment and the dirty conditions, they all died. And so I thought, okay, was that really bad? So I asked them each, how was that that you had to die as a child? And every single one of them, their soul said to me, oh, we didn't want to be there for long like that time. And I thought, oh, it was just my idea. Nothing bad had happened. And so when I confront the fears, I really just open up and explore them with curiosity and just see where are they coming from and how can I have compassion?
Yes, I'm in the process of taking this course called the Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and it's all about looking getting into relationship with your subconscious mind, whether it is releasing stuck emotions, releasing pain and trauma, and what you're describing in going to a past life and seeing where the root, I would say, of these fears lie, and then releasing the energy around it. It seems like something that should be taught in schools. Like these are so basic. Learning how to deal with emotion and deal with our fears seems so basic when we learn how to do it. But it can be such it can be such a big task because fear has so much energy around it. So when you're dealing with another person who you can sense that they're dealing with a lot of fears and maybe they're approaching or projecting it onto you, do you have any kind of techniques of how to, set boundaries with others or how to engage with other people's fear?
I feel life within me that moves me to say yes or no. So when it comes to setting boundaries, it doesn't so much feel like that anymore. It just feels like I have an honest yes or I have an honest no. So like, for example, I had a friend who had really severe health issues and she wanted to go to a doctor 2 hours away. I was looking for somebody to give her a drive, and I didn't feel moved to drive her. And so I thought, wow, is this mean to say no? But I did not give an offer. I didn't. And then I found out that I didn't say yes. I found out that her son that she was estranged from had offered her a ride. So I trust that if the universe is telling me that no is the right answer, it's for a reason. So, but if people are afraid, if I hold the position that they do have all the resources, then I can be compassionate and give in the places it feels good to give. But I can just know that there is infinite holding for them. So it's, again, it doesn't have to be so heavy on my part, because I know that's their journey. I wouldn't want anybody to have taken any of my journey away from me. Every challenge I had turned out to be really important for where I arrived. So I'm not going to take away somebody else's challenges. If that's what they need, then that's what they need.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea of just allowing people to be where they're at and not putting the label on it, whether it's good, bad, right, or wrong. Just you are where you are. It's one of my core beliefs as well. And if we can go back to a second, I'm fascinated by the different ways that people, you know, tap into their past lives. Was when you were working on that fear of, you know, hurting someone, was that the first time that you kind of came across a past life story of your own?
No, it's not the first time. And the way that I do it is I will really feel the feeling, ask it where it's coming from. And then I go sort of in that in-between state from sleep and awake. And by doing that, I just focus on the surface of my hands and my feet till they're buzzing. And I let that buzzing come over my whole body. And then I can feel it sort of pulsing, and I just relax into that buzzing. And then I just wait. And sometimes it'll take several days of doing that, but then eventually it always comes. Like there was another one where I felt this loneliness and I couldn't tell where it had come from. And then we were hiking through these woods, and it was like suddenly the memory came back, because these woods is actually similar to where it had happened. And I had been a man again, and I had brought my wife across the country to live in the Redwoods in California. And after I had this dream of our life together, and shortly after we got to California, she died. And I mourned her the rest of my life. So I felt that life to have been just this very sad life. So I sat back again and just thought, okay, was that true? Was it really as sad as I remember it? And I remembered that I had been active in my community and contributed to a lot of people's lives and had a lot of friends. And I realized that even though my wife hadn't stayed with me, I remembered her the whole time. So the days I had had with her, the few years, they had lasted. And so I had this inner companionship and this very rich life. And I had to admit, I was just sort of imagining loneliness onto that life. And it just really opened up that whole experience.
It's so beautiful that you have had the opportunity to do this kind of work within yourself. When you are remembering a past life experience, are you seeing things, hearing things? Is it a combination of all of it? How does that come through for you?
It's linked to some kind of sensation in me that seems out of proportion to the situation.
Right.
So the first one that I had, I was having really intense menstrual cramps, and I felt this pain at being feminine is what it felt like. And so I just relaxed into that pain of being feminine and waited for the sensations to fill out. And as the sensations kind of fill out, I feel a situation. And so I get visuals in my mind's eye and more sensations through my whole body. That's the main thing, is all these sensations through my whole body. And then I feel, what situation am I in? And then, you know, I get the vision of it. In this particular one, I was in the New England area during the time of the witch hunts or whatever that was.
Yeah.
I wasn't burned at the stake or anything, but I was put in the town square and put into those locks, and they would, you know, I couldn't have any water, and come by, people would come by and taunt me and throw stuff at me, that kind of stuff. And I felt that how people seemed so disgusted by my intuition and so afraid of me, that so wanting to reject me, you know, is very intense memory actually. And it really gave me another sense of strength. You know, I had survived something that was pretty awful. And yeah, I tuned into a sense of strength that I didn't know I had as I had that memory.
Right. And when you go back and you revisit these past lives, is it that you are pulling like resources from them, whether it's that strength or that new understanding of what loneliness is, and allowing that to like integrate into who you're playing as now?
Right. Exactly. There's this strong sense that whatever it is that's linking that life to this life is an opportunity to get resolved and to be understood, to bring compassion, understanding to that. Yeah, it turns out to be very rich.
Yes, it definitely sounds that way. It definitely sounds like you have been able to tap into just the beauty of existence and the fact that existence is, and we'll just keep cycling through it in whatever forms that we are going to find ourselves in.
Right.
Yeah. And so the other thing I wanted to talk to you about from your book is this idea or the concept of the optimizer. And you were talking in the book about how the optimizer essentially suffocates joy and peace in favor of creating fantasies for us of how we can be our best selves or greater selves or right or wrong. Can you speak a little bit about what your optimizer is like and how you navigate that relationship?
Yes. So my optimizer has thought that I need to be more loving and kind. That's the way mine shows up. And so it used to really be like this constant little voice, you know, who needed help? Did you help them enough? Who else needed help? Did you help them enough? It was like this constant scanning in the world. And what's interesting is that it really never was satisfied. And it didn't seem to matter what problem came up. You know, I could go to a store and, you know, there could be some baby crying, and I leave the store and I'm wondering, well, did I upset the baby more? Should I have helped that family? I mean, it was like, it was incessant. You know, I could be late on a bill, paying a bill, and now there it is again. You know, well, you know, were you unkind to somebody recently and that's why you were so forgetful? I could just go nuts. And finally, I realized that it was so out of context. There is no way that it could be right all those times. It was clearly a hammer that was trying to turn everything into a nail. And so then I thought, so it has another purpose because it's not wise. So what is its other purpose? And its other purpose was to create a sense that I had control and value in life. And control and value in life is way overestimated. You know, it's overvalued. Control and value in life, all that is putting myself into a box. So I then decided, okay, I'm not in charge if I'm loving enough. I hand that over to the universe. However I am must be good enough because this is how the universe has manifested here. So the next time that when I really gave that up, the next time the optimizer came in, I was like, wait a second, I'm not in control of that anymore. However I'm showing up is loving enough. And yeah, it felt scary, but now I know that's a good feeling. That uncertainty is a good feeling. That means I'm not trying to put things in my box anymore. And so that just became my constant refrain. I'm not in charge of being loving enough. How I'm showing up is good enough. And it took several years there, but oh, the relief. Oh, it's
Right.
so good.
I can imagine. Yeah, for me at this point, I can imagine what that must feel like. I would say I'm about 5 years truly into the part of my journey where I'm starting to open and expand to these ideas of just being this is okay. Like we're good. There's nothing to fix, nothing to change. Even though I've been on, you know, the self-development, self-help journey for 15 years or something. So there's definitely a big shift in just relaxing into life and living life, you know.
Yeah, good for you. It really is a process. For whatever reason, it seems like the universe is much more interested in experiencing the process of this. So it is, and it takes vigilance. It sounds like you're really feeling that vigilance happening.
It's definitely, it came in early in life where I was just like, I need to figure out a different way because the way that I'm living isn't working for me. And so it's always been there. I guess I just needed different experiences to continue to open me up and realize that I didn't need to identify as heavily with everything that I was identified and attached to. And so as we're wrapping up here, is there anything that you would like to share, offerings that you have? And I'll put all of your information in the show notes at the end, but anything else that you would like to share with anyone around how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. So my website is experiencingthetrueself.com. And I really have enjoyed the videos on my YouTube channel, which is Inquiry with an E, Inquiry into Self. And there's this particular series that's You Are the Party of the Universe. And I just help people realize that every experience we're having is precious. And while they may feel negative, you know, even in the boredom, the pain, the gladness, the sadness, there is something very sweet. And in the end, as we start to sense that, we can feel that there's no mistake. We are exactly right, exactly right. So this journey we're talking about isn't about making us more right. It's about allowing us to relax into the rightness we already have.
Beautifully said. I love that so much. And thank you again so much for coming on and talking to us today about just how much you allowed yourself to exist and just be as you are.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. I really enjoyed being with you.
And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram at Mental Magic Podcast with a period in between each word. Thanks as always for listening. Bye.